Okay, so have you ever wondered, like, if you can use deadly force to protect someone who isn't even, like, legally viable, outside the womb?
That's a really interesting question.
Like, what does the law even say about that? It's pretty mind-boggling, right? Today, we're going to really dig into this whole thing with the case of People v. Kerr.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that one.
It's a crazy legal battle that went down in Michigan, and it tackled that exact question head on.
It sounds like a tough one for sure.
For all of you law students out there, the ones who really want to like get a grip on this whole legal reasoning
But
thing
yeah.
and how it actually plays out in the real world,
Right. Yeah.
this deep dive is going to be all about the Kerr case.
Cool.
And we're going to unpack its implications for this thing called the Defense of Others Doctrine
Okay.
and, the whole constantly evolving understanding of fetal rights.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, what's really interesting about this case is the huge tension at its core. You have this pregnant woman who makes a really serious decision during a domestic violence situation, saying that her main reason for doing what she did was to protect her unborn kids. I mean, that throws us right into the deep end of legal theory, doesn't it? We have to think about like when the law actually recognizes not just a right, but maybe even like a duty to defend someone else.
It totally does. And to really wrap our heads around the legal landscape at play here, we've been poring over all these court documents and the expert analyses of People v. Kerr.
Makes sense.
Our mission in this deep dive is to kind of dissect whether Jacqueline Kerr, the woman in this case,
Right.
could actually claim defense of others when it came to her fetuses who weren't considered viable yet.
Okay.
And we also want to explore what this whole situation tells us about how the law views protecting potential life
Yeah.
weighed against a pregnant woman's autonomy in a dangerous situation.
Definitely a tricky balance.
So, first things first, let's lay out the whole sequence of events that brought this legal challenge to the forefront.
Right. So the background of this case is sadly pretty disturbing, and it's crucial to understand the legal arguments that come later. As the court records show, back on October 9th, 1999, Jacqueline Kerr, who was about 16 weeks pregnant with quadruplets at the time, was the victim of a domestic violence incident with her boyfriend, Antonio Pena. And to make matters worse, Pena had a documented history of domestic abuse.
It's terrible.
During this specific fight, even though he knew Kerr was pregnant, he physically attacked her. He even punched her twice in the stomach.
It's just awful to even think about that kind of violence directed at a pregnant woman.
I agree.
And if we go by Kerr's testimony, things got even worse from there.
Oh no.
She said that when Panna tried to hit her again and
I
again,
know.
going for her stomach, she reacted by stabbing him, and he died from his injuries.
That's so
So
intense.
after Panna died,
Yeah.
Kerr was charged with voluntary manslaughter. Now, at her trial, a big part of her defense strategy was that her actions were totally justified because she wasn't just defending herself,
Right.
but also her four unborn babies from the immediate threat that Pena posed by continuing to attack her.
That makes sense.
This is a super important point, right?
Absolutely.
She specifically asked the trial judge to give the jury instructions on defense of others, arguing that her use of deadly force was necessary to stop Pena from seriously hurting or even killing her fetuses. But here's where things get tricky, don't they?
Totally. The trial court decided not to give the jury those specific instructions.
What? Why?
Well, the judge basically said that under how Michigan law was interpreted at the time, a fetus that's not yet viable, and at 16 weeks, these babies were definitely not considered viable. Viability is usually around 22 weeks. Well, they didn't legally count as an other when it came to the defense of others doctrine.
So in the trial court's eyes,
Yeah.
Kerr could maybe argue self-defense based on the threat to her own life. But the law, as it stood, didn't see her unborn children as individuals that she could legally defend using deadly force under that specific doctrine.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a huge distinction with some pretty serious implications for the case,
It
right?
really is.
So because of all this, Kerr ended up being convicted of voluntary manslaughter.
Oh, wow.
And considering her previous record, she got a pretty hefty sentence, 5 to 20 years as a habitual offender.
Wow, so then what happened?
Well, that conviction became the reason for the appeal. The main legal question that the appellate court had to grapple with was whether the trial court messed up by not instructing the jury about the whole defense of others doctrine in relation to the fetuses that weren't viable yet.
Okay, I see.
And this is where the Michigan Fetal Protection Act of 1998 becomes super important to understanding how the appellate court thought about things.
Interesting.
To really get all the nuances of this case, we need to understand this law.
I agree.
So what did this act actually say?
So back in 1998, Michigan put this Fetal Protection Act into place. It basically set up criminal penalties for anyone who harmed a fetus while assaulting or battering a pregnant woman.
I see.
What's really important for our discussion is that this act didn't make any distinction based on whether the fetus could survive on its own or not.
So it didn't matter how far along the pregnancy was?
Exactly. The protection applied no matter what.
Uh-huh.
The appellate court, when they were reviewing Kerr's case, they made this direct and really important connection between this Fetal Protection Act and the whole defense of others doctrine.
Okay, so let me see if I'm getting this right.
Sure.
The appellate court looked at this law that made it a crime to harm a fetus during an attack on the mother, regardless of whether the fetus could survive.
Yeah.
And then they thought, well, if the state sees the fetus as something that can be harmed and needs legal protection under this act, then shouldn't the mother also have the right to defend that same fetus from harm?
You got it. Like a logical bridge they're building,
it
right?
It totally is.
The Court of Appeals basically argued that by making that Fetal Protection Act without saying anything about viability, the Michigan legislature was clearly showing that they wanted to see fetuses as living entities and protect them.
Okay.
The court's argument was that this intention from the lawmakers should logically also mean allowing a pregnant woman to take action and defend those same living entities if they're in immediate danger during an assault on her.
So basically they're saying that if the law protects the fetus in one situation, it should also protect the mother's right to defend the fetus in another.
Exactly. And they said that by not letting the jury even consider the defense of others instruction, the trial court was basically going against what the lawmakers clearly intended.
That's a pretty smart connection the appellate court made.
Yeah.
It's like they're suggesting that even if the law doesn't say a fetus is a full person in every way, it still says the fetus has value and that value should be considered when talking about defense.
Right.
But they didn't just stop at interpreting state law, did they?
No, they didn't.
They also brought up a really fundamental point about constitutional rights.
You're exactly right. The appellate court put a lot of emphasis on Kerr's basic constitutional right to defend herself in court.
Okay.
They argued that by not giving the jury the defense of others instruction, which they saw as a totally valid legal theory based on the Fetal Protection Act, the trial court basically stopped Kerr from presenting a legitimate explanation for her actions.
Right.
The appellate court clearly stated that this kind of mistake, you know, preventing a defendant from making a real defense, is like stepping on their due process rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution.
So to sum up the appellate court's stance, they basically said that Michigan, through that Fetal Protection Act, had already shown that they wanted to protect fetuses, regardless of whether they could survive on their own.
Yeah.
And when you add that to a defendant's right to a fair trial and to defend themselves, the trial court refusing to give that jury instruction was a huge mistake.
Totally.
And this led to their decision, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. The appellate court overturned the trial court's ruling.
So they basically undid Kerr's conviction.
Exactly. They reversed it and sent the case back to the trial court, saying there had to be a new trial. The main reason they did this was because they thought the trial court had messed up big time by not letting the jury hear about the defense of others doctrine when it came to the fetuses that weren't viable yet.
It's interesting how this case highlights all these little nuances and potential conflicts within the law.
I agree.
One thing that really jumped out at us from the sources was this careful distinction the court made between what viability means in this criminal case compared to how it's used in abortion law, especially with the whole Roe v. Wade decision.
That's a really important point. The appellate court went out of their way to say that how they see when a fetus needs legal protection during a criminal assault is totally different from the idea of viability when we talk about a woman's right to make choices about her own reproductive health, you know, under Roe v. Wade. They were really clear that the Kerr case was all about a violent crime against a pregnant woman and the harm to her unborn children.
Okay.
And not about these bigger questions of reproductive choice.
Which makes sense legally, right? They're keeping different areas of the law separate. But there still seems to be this tension underneath it all, doesn't there?
Yeah, I could see that.
This ruling makes you wonder about the potential clash between recognizing fetal rights, even in this limited way, and the overall idea of a pregnant woman's right to make decisions about her own body and pregnancy.
Right.
Did the court even talk about that potential conflict?
Well, the appellate court mainly focused on what the Michigan Fetal Protection Act actually said and the defendant's right to defend herself in court.
Okay.
Their analysis was mostly about interpreting the laws that were already there and applying them to the specifics of the Kerr case.
Yeah.
They didn't really get into those bigger philosophical debates about maternal autonomy versus fetal rights.
Makes sense.
But as you said, this case does bring up this kind of paradoxical situation.
Definitely. Like we've been saying, a fetus at 16 weeks is usually considered not viable and often, under the rules, couldn't be legally aborted. But this appellate court ruling says that using maybe deadly force to protect that same fetus while someone's attacking the mother could be okay under the law because of the defense of others doctrine. It's
right.
This knot of legal ideas and deeply held beliefs in society.
Yeah, it really is.
So given the appellate court's decision, what actually changed in Michigan? How did things work differently in similar cases after this ruling?
So the biggest thing was that in Michigan, the defense of others doctrine now included the possibility of protecting a fetus that wasn't viable yet.
Okay.
And this was specifically when the harm to the fetus happened during an attack on the mother. So in any future cases that were like this, a defendant could now tell a jury that what they did, even using deadly force, was legal because they were trying to protect their unborn child from a clear and present danger, no matter how far along the pregnancy was or whether the fetus could survive on its own.
Wow, that's a pretty big change.
It is.
This case is like a crash course in how legal interpretation works and how different laws and constitutional rights all fit together, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah. It's like a perfect example of how courts look at the laws made by legislatures and how public policy ideas that change over time can really affect how old common law ideas like defense of others are used in the criminal justice system.
Yeah, and it also shows how a law that might seem separate at first glance, like this Fetal Protection Act,
right,
can actually be used to broaden the scope of these traditional legal concepts.
Exactly.
And of course, it really highlights how important it is to understand and use your basic constitutional rights.
Yes.
Like the right to due process and the right to present a full defense in court.
It's crucial.
But we also have to remember where things stood with the Kerr case after the appeal.
Oh, right.
The appellate court's decision wasn't about saying whether Jacqueline Kerr was actually guilty or innocent of voluntary manslaughter.
Yeah.
They were just looking at the legal question of whether the trial court made a big enough mistake to justify overturning the whole thing.
Right.
They didn't say Kerr was innocent. They just said that the trial court messed up so badly that she needed a new trial where she could use the defense of others argument in front of a new jury.
Gotcha.
Just to make sure we're all on the same page with the legal stuff here.
Okay.
Let's go over some of the key ideas that were at the heart of this whole thing. First up, the defense of others doctrine itself. What does it really mean?
So basically, the defense of others doctrine says that you can use a reasonable amount of force, even deadly force sometimes,
right,
to protect another person from a threat of serious harm or death that's happening right then and there and is illegal.
Okay.
The really important part is that the force you use has to make sense and be appropriate to the level of danger the other person is in.
Right.
And in the Kerr case, the big question was, can a fetus that can't survive on its own be considered an other person that you can use this doctrine to protect? So that brings us to the whole concept of viability. We've already talked about it in this case and how it relates to abortion law, but we need to be clear about what it means in these different situations.
Definitely. When we talk about abortion law, especially because of Roe v. Wade,
right,
fetal viability usually means the point in the pregnancy when the fetus can survive outside the mother's womb.
Okay.
Which is generally somewhere between 22 and 24 weeks, often with medical help.
Mm-hmm.
But the appellate court in the Kerr case made it super clear that how we understand viability in the context of reproductive rights is totally different from how it applies to this specific area of criminal law.
Uh-huh.
Especially because Michigan's Fetal Protection Act clearly says they want to protect fetuses no matter how far along they are.
Right. Another concept that was crucial to how the appellate court decided things is statutory interpretation. How did the court actually use this to reach their conclusion?
Well, statutory interpretation is basically how courts figure out and apply the laws made by lawmakers. In the Kerr case, the appellate court did this by really looking closely at what the Michigan Fetal Protection Act of 1998 said and what it was trying to do.
Right.
Since that law didn't mention anything about viability, the court decided that the Michigan legislature meant to protect fetuses throughout the whole pregnancy.
Okay.
And that's how they decided that the defense of others doctrine should include fetuses that can't survive on their own, specifically if the mother is being attacked.
And finally, we have due process, which was at the center of why the appellate court overturned the trial court's decision. Can you break down why not letting the jury hear about the defense of others was seen as violating Kerr's right to due process?
So due process is this basic right you have under the 14th Amendment.
Uh-huh.
It basically means that legal proceedings have to be fair and impartial. In the Kerr case, the appellate court said that by not letting the jury consider her defense of others argument, an argument that they thought could be backed up by Michigan law, specifically the Fetal Protection Act, the trial court had basically taken away Kerr's chance to properly present her case to the jury.
Okay.
They saw this as a violation of her constitutional right to a fair trial, and that's why they overturned the conviction and ordered a new trial.
I think it's helpful to go back to some key quotes from the court's decision.
Yeah, good idea.
Just to really drive home their reasoning.
Absolutely. One quote that really shows how the court was using the Fetal Protection Act is the legislature's conclusion that fetuses are worthy of protection as living entities. This shows how they saw that law as giving broad protection to fetuses.
And this other quote really gets to the heart of the constitutional issue. Instructional errors that exclude a defense theory infringe due process. It basically explains why the appellate court thought that refusing to give that jury instruction was such a big deal that it meant the conviction had to be overturned. So just to sum it all up for everyone listening, in Michigan, because of what the appellate court decided in People v. Kerr, the defense of others doctrine can now include protecting a fetus even if it can't survive on its own. And this applies specifically when the fetus is in danger because someone is attacking the pregnant mother. This change is based mainly on the Michigan Fetal Protection Act, which shows that the state wants to protect fetuses no matter what stage of development they're in.
Yes.
And also on the basic right of anyone accused of a crime to present a valid defense to a jury.
Absolutely.
This deep dive into the People v. Kerr case really shows how complicated things can get when you look at criminal law, how our understanding of fetal rights is changing, and the fundamental ideas of a woman's right to make her own choices and defend herself.
Yeah, it does.
It makes you think, how is this ruling going to affect future legal cases that involve harm to pregnant women and their unborn children, especially in violent crimes?
Hmm, that's a good question.
And what does it mean for society as a whole when the law says it's okay to defend a fetus that can't survive on its own, even if it's only in very specific situations, like an attack on the mother?
Lots to think about.
These are really important questions to consider as you keep learning about the law and dealing with these complicated and often emotionally charged topics.
I agree. It's a lot to unpack, but it's important to grapple with these issues.
I couldn't agree more. It's essential to have these kinds of conversations. Thanks for diving into this with me today.
Thanks for having me. It's been really enlightening.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
And keep asking the tough questions.